Support for KSJD's streaming comes from Osprey PAX, independent since 1974, setting the standard for creating and producing innovative, high-quality, caring equipment designed to inspire and ease your journey. Osprey PAX is committed to the local communities where it operates and to protecting the wild places its customers love to explore. For more information, visit OspreyPAX.com.
This is Canyon Chronicles, where we talk about archaeology, history, and the culture of these places. Today, our guest is Michael R. Maddox, who prefers to go by Mike. Mike has written over 6 years, researched and written a very detailed book about Ike Porter and Ike Stockton, Colorado-New Mexico border outlaws. So today we're going to talk about some really bad guys. Mike, welcome.
Well, thank you. It's my pleasure to be here in Cortez this morning.
Mike, when we talk about your book and the contents of your book, it really, really relates so much to the peoples of this area. And I wonder if we might not start by talking about what the San Juan County was or is.
Well, the San Juan
Country, not
yes,
county.
Yes, the San Juan Country really encompasses portions of Colorado, New Mexico, and Utah. All three of those states actually have a San Juan County. And, of course, it all relates to the San Juan Mountains and the San Juan River as well. And my book really touches on the settlement, the earliest settlement of particularly Colorado and New Mexico, when people first began to move in here when this was opened up to settlement in the 1870s. And it was really one of the last unsettled areas in the American West.
So if I were going to draw a line around kind of the major parts of the San Juan country, I could start down in Colfax County, go west all the way out to Pagosa Springs, north up past Silverton, Durango, Silverton, over to Rico, almost to Moab, back down here through Cortez, and back on down to Aztec and Farmington.
Well, I think you started a little too far east. Okay. Colfax County is over by Raton and Trinidad, Colorado. Really not part of the San Juan Country, but the Stocktons were there. They moved there in the 1870s before they came over to the San Juan Country. I would consider the San Juan Country the area from essentially Wolf Creek Pass westward from there into Utah, across southwest Colorado, northwest New Mexico.
Well, this is really where our people live here that listen to us at the station. I wonder if you could step back just a minute before we get to the San Juan Country in more detail and tell us about guys like Porter and Ike Stockton. What were they like? How did they get made?
Well, Porter and Ike Stockton were born in 1850 and 1852. They were both born in Texas. The timing of their birth assured that they and where they lived assured that they would be caught up in the cattle industry, which exploded in the years right after the Civil War. Cattle had not been able to be sold in Texas during the Civil War. There was no market. The northern market was gone. The cowboys in Texas were off fighting Yankees. And the cattle became extremely populous and extremely wild. When the Confederate soldiers came back, there was a vast amount of cattle roaming across Texas, and several cattlemen decided they could make some money and started herding those cattle out of Texas. The Goodnight Loving Trail was really the most prominent one that had the most influence on New Mexico and Colorado. And it came up through the Pecos River in New Mexico and then on up through Colfax County, New Mexico, and on up northward from Denver. And it really spread it westward from there. And the Texas cattle industry, those cattlemen eventually spread into the San Juan Country. And many of them actually settled here. And many of those had close relationships with Oliver Loving and Charles Goodnight, who started that trail.
So how did Ike and Porter become men, and what was the world like for them at that time?
Well, their parents both died when they were young, very young. And so they eventually moved to Erath County, Texas, and they began to get into trouble there. I think the lack of the parents probably contributed to that. They were both indicted for crimes in Erath County, Texas. Then they both moved to Colfax County, New Mexico. I mean, it was a tough time for people who lived there if you were challenged. Porter Stockton in particular never backed down from any challenge he had while living in Colfax County. Before he ever moved to the San Juan country, he was indicted for three separate murders in the area around Cimarron and Raton, New Mexico, in northeast New Mexico.
In your book, you mention, I just read just a bit of it. It says, at the center of this maelstrom were men, ambitious men, resourceful men, and in some cases, violent men. They'd been tempted by the savagery of the Civil War, tempered by the savagery of the Civil War, others by Indian battles along the Texas frontier. To be sure, the vast majority of Texas cowboys were not outlaws, and many of them went on to be leading citizens of the Lone Star State. The same grittiness and determination that produced successful trail drivers produced other kinds of men as well. And the trail that snaked through the Pecos country was one of incredible hardship and danger. Driving cattle across these large stretches of arid portions of Texas and New Mexico, the territory inhabited by free-roaming and combative Indians, required men who would never back down from anything.
That sums it up. Yeah,
yeah. I thought you did an excellent job at talking about that. So these were guys that had never been protected by law. There was no law around that wasn't Yankee law, and they had to take care of themselves in every way, and just became violent guys.
Essentially, yes. And Porter Stockton just had a violent bent. Ike Stockton is actually the more well-known brother, but it was really Porter Stockton who was really the much more violent brother and very extremely dangerous fellow.
The era of the cattle drives really was from about 1870, 1865 to 1875, rough and ready. Is that right?
Yeah, and then it began to wane after that.
Okay. Well, we'll come back in just a moment and continue our conversation with Mike Maddox. This is Mike Woodrow with Canyon Chronicles. And we're back. This is Mike Woodrow with Mike Maddox, and we're talking about some very bad guys on the border outlaws of Porter and Ike Stockton. Before we went to the break, you had described the San Juan country. And in the 1970s, there was 1870s, there was humongous turmoil. Lots and lots of change going on that opened up the San Juan County and then started to shut it down.
Yes, the San Juan country really wasn't open to settlement until the 1870s when Felix Bruneau negotiated the Utes out of the San Juan Mountains. In 1874, that's when people began to move into Colorado. And in New Mexico, right across the border, it wasn't open until July 1876 when President Grant took that area out of the Hickory Apache Reservation and opened up it up to homesteaders. Then people began to pour in to the San Juan country. At the same time, the DNRG Railroad had started their railroad up in Denver and were working their way towards the San Juan country. It would take them several years to get there. Then there was the convergence of that railroad, the opening up of a new country, and the settlement of cattlemen in the San Juan country that all converged at essentially the same time that made this country very, very rough for the earliest years. And Porter and Ike Stockton settled right into that. But Porter Stockton settled in Animas City, which is the north end of Durango, and Ike Stockton settled just north of Aztec, New Mexico, right across from the Aztec Ruins National Monument. And that's where they first lived when they moved here. They actually switched locations then, and Ike moved up to Animas City. Porter Stockton moved down to the Aztec area, and they lived there for only about 2 years before they met untimely deaths.
Depends on who you ask whether they were untimely or not, right? So by the second half of the 1870s, you also have the introduction or the end of the open range and the closure and in the creation of large cattlemen and smaller cattlemen. And a lot of guys just decided not to go that way and found a different way to make money out of cattle.
Well, really, that open range existed for a little bit longer than that, but there were huge amounts of cattle roaming in the area around Durango, Farmington, and up into the Cortez area. I mean, a couple of these cattlemen, they owned thousands and thousands of cattle that roamed over a range that exceeded over 60 miles in length. So it was a tremendous amount of cattle and, of course, a tremendous attraction to people, to cowboys who thought they could enter the cattle business with cattle other than their own.
But give our listeners a sense of some of the what it was like to actually be in your skin in this environment with such violence. Talk about about Mormon and the murder and his lynching in Durango, the Durango gun battle.
Oh, well, Henry Reed Mormon, he was he was lynched in Durango in the early months of 1881. He's really Durango's only lynching. They had a legal hanging a year after that. And as it turns out, the night that he was hung, a bunch of cowboys from the Farmington area had ridden up from New Mexico to Durango to actually get Ike Stockton because he had been stealing their cattle. When they arrived in Durango, they sent a couple of guys into Durango to check things out, find Ike Stockton. They got into town, and some of the leaders in town were in the process of lynching Henry Reed Mormon. So they came back out to their compatriots, who were up on where Third Avenue is now in Durango, and they said, you know, tonight is not a good night to get Ike Stockton. They rode up to Animas City, which is where the city market is on North Main Street, that area, spent the night there, and then came down the next morning as they were riding back down that mesa where Third Avenue is. They were fired upon by Ike Stockton and his cohorts, and they had a little gun battle there. Only two innocent bystanders were wounded. None of the participants were wounded. The New Mexicans eventually extricated themselves and rode on to New Mexico. But it caused an uproar in Durango, having that gun battle in town. It really caused a lot of turmoil in town, and it put a lot of pressure on Ike then to leave town. In fact, they tried to kick him out of town. It really didn't work for him, but they attempted to.
And he then ended up getting shot in 1881.
Well, yeah, Porter Stockton was actually shot and killed by vigilantes between Farmington and Aztec at a little burg named Flora Vista, where I live, by vigilantes in front of his wife and children. Ike decided to avenge his brother's death, and 9 months later, in September 1881, Ike was shot and killed by the sheriff of La Plata County and his deputy in downtown Durango. It was essentially a high noon shootout in Durango, and Ike's leg was amputated later that evening. He died at 2 a.m. the following morning with his wife and two children by his side.
That brings us to another interesting story. I mean, when you think about the things that were happening here and how rough life was, some really interesting things came out of that. Talk about Ike's wife and what happened with her.
I do include a whole section in the book about what happened to some of the people who were involved. And his widow, Amanda Ellen Stockton, remarried a year later. Her husband was named N.C. Coldwell. He was a prominent attorney in Durango. That family later moved to Durango. She'd given birth to a son named Nathaniel Coldwell there in Durango. Nathaniel Coldwell, after they moved to California, entered into the real estate business with a guy named Arthur Banker and co-founded Coldwell Banker Real Estate. So the founder of Coldwell Banker was born in Durango, the son of Ike Stockton's widow.